Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 21st of July, Anno Domini 2018, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. And of course, before I get to the news, I should tell you that you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. In what is becoming a common occurrence, Microsoft's patch Tuesday brought along so many bugs that they necessitated a remediation round. This month, unusually, it only took 6 days to get the exterminators out. Since these fixes are aimed at four specific bugs introduced on patch Tuesday, they don't include the massive patches normally appearing in the second patch whatever day of the month. My guess is we'll see at least one more big set of Windows patches before the month is out. Oh boy. On Monday, Microsoft released 27 new security patches for Windows, bringing the total number of patches so far this month up to 156.
This month.
This month. The new patches fall into six separate groups. Windows 10 version 1803 got a cumulative update. Windows 10 1709 got a patch. Windows 10 1703 got a patch. Windows 10 1607 Server 2016 got a patch. You get a patch. You get a patch. You get a patch. Windows 8. Hashtag everyone gets a patch. Windows 8.1 Server 2012 R2 got a manual download only patch. So if you're using Windows 8.1, you got a manual download waiting for you. Windows 7. And Server 2008 R2 also got a manual-only patch. We have reports that this patch breaks acquiring IP addresses over a wireless connection. All six of the groups say they fixed the same basic bugs, issues. All of the acknowledged issues say something like this: addresses an issue that may cause some devices running network monitoring workloads to receive the 0xD1 stop error because of a race condition after installing the July update, or addresses an issue with the DHCP failover server that may cause enterprise clients to receive an invalid configuration when requesting a new IP address, which results in loss of connectivity, or TCP port already in use, or administrators can't stop the World Wide Web publishing service. It says it stopped, but it isn't. Duh. And you can't restart it because it isn't really stopped.
So start doesn't mean anything.
Right. Yeah, you heard that correctly. If you installed any of the Patch Tuesday patches for Windows last week, you got hit with at least three of those bugs. They won't affect most of you, but for folks relying on those specific features, these bugs are deadly.
Not bugs, they're just features.
Features. Yet another reason to hold off on installing this month's Windows 7 patch, as if you needed another one. After those recent updates, web servers are not functioning well. When restarting a service under IIS, the service refuses to start again unless you do a reboot. Also, all our custom services listening to a socket refuse to start. To answer the most obvious question, no, it doesn't appear as if anyone tested these things before they shoved out the Windows update down the old chute.
No, they're testing it.
Yeah.
On everybody that's using it.
Yeah.
That's their testing ground now.
You're the beta tester.
You're an unpaid beta tester.
That is exactly right.
You didn't pay for Windows 10. The others are discontinued. So anything they dish out, you're the guinea pig.
And that's the double jeopardy with Windows 7. Mm-hmm. There's nobody you can call anymore.
Yeah. No, they're not there.
And there's nothing you can do anymore. So if somebody calls us today and says, I installed the patch for my Windows 7 machine and now I can't get on the internet.
Oh, well.
The response is, yep, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And Microsoft doesn't, we don't know if Microsoft is going to fix that. And until they fix it, there's nothing else you can do.
Probably two chances of that.
Well, right.
Slim and none.
But there is one thing you can do. It's called Linux.
Right.
All right. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft just patched the patches to this month's patches again. And your choices are deja vu all over again. I'm getting again. Really tired of this. What's a mother to do? Nobody remembers that commercial anymore except me. Just another brick in the wall. And you poor, poor Windows users. So far, we've got 19 votes. Over half of you are saying you poor, poor Windows users. Followed by, in a very distant second, I'm getting really tired of this. And I know you'll have more to say about this particular thing. So if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. And the first forum down is the poll discussion. And the first topic, at least so far under the poll discussion, is 21 July 18. Microsoft just patched the patches to this month's patches. Again. So leave your messages there and take out your frustrations. Just remember, we try to keep this family friendly, and we aren't Microsoft, so don't yell at us. But also, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
There's some interesting wording on Microsoft's Windows 10 update history page where it lists all the updates. It doesn't enumerate them. It just lists them.
Right.
On and on and on and on and on. Windows 10 is a service, which means it gets better through updates.
Right, right.
Windows 10 is a service. We can charge you for services, can't we?
Right. One of the things is the issue of, at least what, I'm not a lawyer, I don't even play one on television anymore, but one of the few things I seem to understand about taxes is that services are handled differently from products.
Right.
So you can charge differently for a service and it's taxed differently, sometimes not at all. And so you don't have to collect taxes on a service.
And sometimes the tools, we run into this in our with our customers. There's an old law called Tools of the Trade, designed in the farming community, that when a farmer buys a tractor, they don't pay tax on the tractor because they collect tax when they sell their product. So the thing you use to make the taxable item is not taxed.
Right. Any device that you use to make a product, like say you buy a piece of machinery mm-hmm. to make something, that's non-taxable because it's being used to produce your product that you're selling.
How come I pay tax on my computer?
What are you producing to make a profit?
Software.
It has to be 100%.
Yeah.
So we run into that. We sell a computer into, say, an ad agency.
Exclusive use. Yep. No other use other than that.
So right. Really, what else are you going to do with a tractor?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A computer that goes into the creative department is not taxed because they're creating the ad work. The computer that goes into the accounting department or the business office is taxed because that's not creating the taxable item.
Right.
The only people who ever win are the lawyers.
Yeah. And we found all this out when we got tax audited.
Yeah. Henry the Fourth, part two. First thing let's do, let's kill all the lawyers. Yeah. But
Henry
yes.
the Ford?
What?
You said Henry the Ford?
No.
Henry the Eighth? One of Shakespeare's plays.
Henry the Fourth, part two.
The Fourth.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's what I said.
I kept hearing Ford.
Henry Ford.
Henry
Ford, part two.
Yeah.
Shakespeare, William Shakespeare, wrote a play about Henry Ford and his assembly line.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. And in fact, he wrote two parts.
He's ahead of his time.
This is when he was married to Anne Hathaway, who played Catwoman.
Yeah.
Oh.
All right. Now that we've got that straightened out, cheese and crackers. He did. His wife's name was Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, I know.
Also the name of an actress.
You do Ritz or Saltine, though.
What? I didn't hear you.
Ritz or Saltine.
Crackers.
Right, with cheese and crackers. Is it Ritz or salt?
Cheese and crackers. Either. I prefer saltines. Ritz are better for me.
Yeah.
Although I really like Ritz crackers. Everything sits better on a Ritz. Except me. If I sit on a Ritz, that's the end of the Ritz. That Ritz is done. We're done with that Ritz. But yeah, so if you are using Windows, be very careful what you've updated this month. Of course, you don't usually get a choice, so sorry. Like we said, like I said in the news itself, very few home users were hit by this problem. But it's possible that you were, because if you updated a Windows 10 laptop and suddenly it could not connect to the internet, well, that's why. You can mitigate that problem when the next patch to the patch to the patch comes out, probably next week.
To patch the patch.
To patch the patch, the patch, the patch.
You
the,
hope.
The jack built.
You hope. No guarantees.
No guarantees. Mm-mm. But when that patch comes out, you will be able to install it by plugging in to a wired connection, because wired connections are still working. Now, the problem with that is if you don't have a wired connection on your laptop.
I was going to say, a lot, some of them don't. They're wireless.
Many of them don't nowadays. You know, a lot of them have no. It's this fin mania.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them have no.
They do everything wireless.
They have no jack.
Yeah.
So you can buy a USB-C to Ethernet dongle, but now you're spending money to fix Microsoft's mistake, which kind of sucks.
Yeah.
But that's really the only way around it if your laptop does not connect to the internet. And of course, if you're using a desktop, you didn't run into this situation because you're probably not using wireless. I discovered my desktop actually has wireless. And because I'm using Linux, it's splitting the signal. So I'm actually getting...
Well, that's quite really kind of cool.
Very nice. It's very cool. But at any rate, the point here is if you are one of the people who is using Windows on a laptop and you lost connectivity, all you can do is wait. If you are using Windows 7, really all you can do is wait. There are a couple of things out on the internet that some people say helped editing the
host config.
The host config helped also editing the registry.
Well, you
mitigated
broke
it for
else.
Some people, right?
Yeah,
mitigated it for some people. I don't recommend either of those. So my suggestion is you got to wait, or go out and buy yourself a Chromebook and get right back on the internet with no trouble.
And don't get viruses.
That's the choice right there.
Yeah. You're not paying for software and
right.
There is no downside to it.
Right. So at any rate, the point here, of course, is, be careful, with your installs, those of you can, for example, Windows 7, Windows 8.1, those are manual installs. I would skip them for now if you haven't done them already, and wait until the patch comes out. For Windows 10 users, of course, you get much less choice.
You're hosed.
If you were caught, well, you were caught, but many people were not. Many people don't have whatever the specific configuration is that caused the issue. And that, of course, is one of the other problems. Every time I put out something that says, you know, thousands of people, millions of people were caught by a Microsoft update or a Microsoft, I get all these things. Didn't happen to me. Well, right. There's like 100 billion Windows machines out there, and yours didn't happen to have the problem because you don't have the exact combination of hardware and software that causes the problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Congratulations. I got nothing else to say to you.
Big numbers. We can't get a grasp on. What is it? A million seconds ago was yesterday.
Right.
A billion seconds ago was 12 years. A trillion seconds ago, mastodons were still roaming North America.
Yep. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And hey, have we got a treat for you in the second hour of this show.
You got to definitely call all your friends, because we've had a number of folks say, what happened to it? And what I'm talking about is Uncle Dave's Story Hour. I've got a good one, and you're definitely not going to want to miss this one. Because this could save you a lot of grief and aggravation.
Yep.
So even tell some of your other friends, get them on the line and, you know, listening to this program, because we got a great tip that you're going to not want to miss out on next hour.
Right.
For sure.
But in the meantime, we have this hour. And of course, you can join us by giving us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. All my friends listening in Europe, 1-800-790-0415. Hackers are constantly scouring the internet for their next target. One of their favorite things to attack is a vulnerable database server. That's because such servers store all kinds of data that could be useful in future attacks. They're after personal data like names, addresses, and passwords. Over the years, hackers have broken into some pretty massive databases. Sometimes they make off with millions of records at a time. So, what does a hacker do with millions of users' passwords? I stand behind what I say. One common type of cyber attack is known as credential stuffing. In a credential stuffing attack, a hacker loads up a database with as many usernames and passwords as he or she can get their hands on. And that these days is in the millions. Those login credentials are fed into an automated hacking tool that hammers away at a website. You can think of a hacker's password database as a key ring. The more keys there are, the more likely it is that the attacker will find one that unlocks your account. These attacks are much more common than you might think. According to Shape Security, around 90% of all login attempts on retail websites aren't shoppers logging in with their own accounts. They're the result of a credential stuffing attack. Other kinds of sites are targeted too. Airline sites come in second, where credential stuffing accounts for about 60% of logins. Just behind airlines are online banking sites at 58%, and rounding out the top four, hotels at 44%. So how secure are your passwords? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
A lot of people say they have nothing to steal, so that, you know, they don't bother making secure passwords. But it's, you've got a bank account, even if there's only a couple dollars in it. If they do a million people with a couple dollars in it, that's fine.
More importantly, they want your information.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I know enough information about you, I can take out credit cards in your name. I can take out Social Security in your name. That's tougher because that check has to go somewhere.
I can attack other people in your name.
In your name.
Hide myself.
One thing everybody should do is sign up for Social Security. I don't care how old you are, how young you are. You should sign up, because once you are signed up and you got to do the two-factor authentication, so they send you the code every time on your phone, blah, blah, blah. Once you do that, the possibility of someone stealing your identity, stealing your Social Security stuff, gets much, much less. So everybody, sign up. Whether you're planning on taking Social Security now or not, you should sign up just sign up at the site.
And then you'll get those depressing emails every now and then that says, if you retire now, we'll pay you $100 a month.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So I can never retire.
It's about right. Dear heaven, that's about right. Whether or not you plan on taking Social Security now or not, sign up for it, because if someone else can sign up in your name, then they get access to all the information the Social Security Administration has on you, which, trust me, is a significant amount. And using that information, they can take out credit cards in your name, which they can then max out.
Put you in a world of hurt.
Put you in a world of hurt.
In an unfortunate coincidence, the Social Security Administration website is offline right now, so you can't create an account.
Right.
They were supposed to be back up at noon, but they're not.
But they're not. Well, it's not noon wherever they are. Washington.
What do you mean, Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, okay.
Same time zone.
I don't even think they're in the same century as the rest of us. Yeah. Never mind time zone.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's a pretty serious thing. That's also why we tell people use unique passwords everywhere.
And different ones for different accounts.
And not only that, but not even similar ones. So if you use, for example, if you use Nick Facebook for your Facebook account and Nick Twitter for your Twitter account and Nick Instagram and Nick Soundbites and Nick whatever you log into.
So then I'm going to try Nick PayPal and Nick Amazon.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what they're going to try. If they crack any one of them.
Bingo.
They will then have a pattern to try on the rest.
And there are over 5 billion lost accounts that have been lost in security breaches. And so there's a good chance that your account, your username and password has been lost from somebody.
Right. And if it's unique, if you have not used the same password or the same pattern of password in two places, then you're better off. And by pattern, I don't mean, you know, a bunch of characters, then some numbers, then a bunch of characters. That's not the kind of pattern I'm talking about. I'm talking about, you know, Nick Twitter, Nick Facebook. Nick
Obvious
Instagram.
Ones, yeah.
Right. So be very careful what you make. And what amazes me, continually amazes me, is people intelligent, quick-witted, normally very smart people, you tell them, okay, I need a password, they freeze.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I hate doing this.
I hate doing that. Okay.
All right, well, the just reason hand me all your money now then.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
The reason you hate doing this is because you have to remember that password. The secret is you don't. You can use a password vault. I happen to use NPass. Other people use LastPass. Other people, there's a dozen of them.
And if you have a Mac, the keychain is built in, and you're already using it without knowing it.
Macs have keychains. Windows has keychains. Linux has keychains. My Chromebook has keychains. The big difference is with something like NPass or LastPass or whatever, you can maintain that exact same database across multiple devices. And
multiple operating systems.
And multiple operating systems, exactly. So if you have any sort of password vault, your need to pick a password you'll remember is much, much, much less. Now, I admit, when I worked for a living, I remembered 23, 24 passwords, long 20-character, 25-character passwords every day.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my job.
Yeah.
Now I can't remember what I had for breakfast.
That's not your job.
It's not my job. Exactly. Exactly.
I bet your wife remembers.
Yes, my wife does remember. But I remember I have bagels because I have bagels almost every morning. But generally speaking, if you've got a password vault of some sort, the pressure is off. So you can make long, involved passwords that are much more secure, 20 characters, 25 characters, because you can cut and paste. All you have to remember is the password for LastPass.
Yeah.
Or NPass, or whichever one you have to use.
Whichever product you choose to use.
And that's the only password you actually have to remember. And so I can look at it on my phone. I can look at it on my laptop, on my desktop, on wherever I want to be.
All right. One other question, though. All right. Say I've got, because I don't use, the NPass of that, particular password, say for your banking.
Sure.
And they require you every 6 months to change your password.
Yep.
will that also suggest another password updating the one that you currently have?
One of the beautiful things about this, most of these systems, is you can generate random passwords. And again, you can say, I want to generate a random password that includes numbers, letters, whatever, whatever. And I want it to be a minimum of 24 characters long and blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? Now you don't care what that password is because you don't have to remember it.
Right.
So you can generate these syntactically ridiculous, long, involved passwords that are super secure. Well, more secure.
You'd need quite a few lifetimes. A number of lifetimes to crack it.
Right, right. As opposed to Nick Facebook.
Yeah.
So you can make these passwords just by clicking a button and say, that's my new password, copy it, then paste it into the site, repaste it in the confirm your password. Why they bother with that anymore? Because everybody just cuts and pastes anyway.
Yeah.
But fine.
I have typed it wrong twice.
Oh, yeah.
And then when I try to go back in,
I can't type it.
Well, I can't type it wrong again.
Yeah. Right.
Because I made a typo, the same typo twice.
Right, right.
And then I have to change it again.
So now you're back to that I forgot my password thing. Right. I'll tell you what, the biggest pain in the neck on every website I've created is creating that I forgot my password thing. It's a pain in the neck every time.
And the biggest problem is not you forgetting your password or somebody hacking into you. It's someone hacking the other end. The Target breach, Facebook, not Facebook, Home Depot, Equifax, Experian, Adobe. Pretty much everybody has been breached and lost their password vault. I just got one the other day from one of the, was it MyHeritage Ancestry programs.
Right.
And sometimes these companies don't save the password very well and they're easily guessable. So you didn't do anything, but the other end lost your password. And so now the bad guys have your password. So we've talked in the past about the Have I Been Pwned website. The password, password has been used, 3.5 million times.
Yep.
So it can actually search for, passwords. What was the other one? Monkey we liked. Monkey has been, only 122 times.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So then the website says, you have to use 7 characters. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Right.
1, 2. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 has been seen 22 million times.
Okay, here's what makes me angry. When you go to a website, you type in a username, you type in a password, you repeat that password, you hit enter, and then it comes back and says, your username must be more than 8 characters. So you change the password, you change the username rather, you type the password in again, you type the password in again, now it comes back and says, your password must include all of these things.
Yeah.
I like the sites that give you that list.
It should be up there.
And as you type, it will say, okay.
It's got to have this requirements.
So before
one uppercase, one number, one character.
Yep. There are some sites that do it right, and before you even hit enter, it will show you if that's going to be an acceptable password or not.
Right. So, it's and that's also why a lot of websites.
Nobody's used Happy 34 Monkey.
Hey, excellent. Now, though.
Yeah. And you can download the list of 500 million lost passwords if you want to look at it yourself.
Yeah,
it's only 10 gigs.
It's only 10 gigs, and it's actually pretty cool. It really is. But the point, the thing is, be sure that your passwords are secure. And you do that by making them unique and long and complex in the sense that it's upper and lower case numbers and symbols. And so you have security. Even if the other end gets breached, they only get one password that is not linked to any of your other passwords.
Right, and many of the password managers, and hopefully it will soon be all of the password managers, watch for these breaches.
Right.
And then they will tell you, this company just got breached, and I notice you have a saved password from them. You better go change it now.
Right.
Because people don't pay attention to the breach lists.
No, they don't.
It happens so often that it's not news anymore.
It's not news anymore. It's hard to manage.
Yeah.
The other thing is that there's not a standard for how company should save passwords. Well, now there's a GDPR, the General Data Protection rule or regulation from the European Union. We'll talk about that when we come back. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are soundbites. And don't forget to listen to the second hour for Uncle Dave's Story Hour. And Dave is redesigning the studio.
How do these mics get screwed up every week?
Does somebody go
through and unscrew them all during the week?
Apparently, that's exactly what happens. At any rate, we're back, and let me read another news story.
Well, I was just worried about this one falling down like that last time.
Right.
I'm standing there talking on the microphone, and all of a sudden I got it in my hand instead of on the swinger.
Right. I thought you were going to start bursting into lounge songs.
Fly me to the moon and let me play.
All right.
No, I sing solo. Solo, you can't hear me.
Right. What would you like me to sing? Over the Hill and Far Away.
Yeah.
On Wednesday, Apple released the third version of the iOS 12 beta as part of the public beta program. It means that everyone can now install a development build of iOS 12. Speaking of being beta testers for a company.
But you choose to in here.
But you choose to here, yes, exactly. And iOS 12, of course, is the next major version of the operating system for iPhone and iPad. Don't forget, this is still a beta version. Things will crash. Things won't work. Don't be surprised if you lose data in your photos, notes, or messages apps, for instance. Do not install this beta if you want a smooth iPhone or iPad experience. But if you have a recent iPhone or iPad you don't use every day and a separate login so you don't screw up your current login, you can get a glimpse of the future of iOS right now. While the final version of iOS 12 should be released near the end of September, although that's not a promise, nobody knows for sure, Apple is going to release beta versions every few weeks over the summer. Before installing the beta, don't forget to back up your device to iCloud and or your computer using iTunes. You can then head over to Apple's beta website, sign up with your Apple ID, and download the beta profile. The profile is just a tiny file that tells your iDevice to check for public betas. After restarting your device, you can open up the Settings app and install the iOS update, just like any normal software update. If you already installed the previous beta, it's time to update now. In September, your device should automatically update to the final version of iOS 12, and you'll be able to delete the configuration file. Here's a quick rundown on what's new in iOS 12, or what we expect to be new. It's still in beta. Things come and go so quickly around here. The main feature of iOS 12 is the performance improvement, especially for older devices. If you have an iPhone 6 or an iPad Air, for instance, you should see a big improvement when it comes to launching apps, triggering the camera, and entering text. The other big theme of the year is new features to help you spend less time using your phone. There's a new screen time feature to see and control how much time you spend using each app. That may be the single most depressing thing Apple has ever published. Ever.
They got criticized for how addictive the phones are by some teacher groups. So they put this feature in, and you can control it on your kids.
Right.
So, you know, you've been in Instagram for 8 hours today? No. Right. Not anymore.
Not anymore. Notifications are now grouped, and you can silence them from the lock screen. You can also turn on Do Not Disturb when you're in a meeting for a few hours or for longer. Apple didn't stop there and added new power features as well. Developers will be able to take advantage of a new file format for augmented reality and new features in the augmented reality kit, ARKit, I don't know how they pronounce it, 2.0. iPhone X. Apple is releasing the Workflow app as a new Siri Shortcuts app. Developers will be able to add information to Siri as well, so you can add a boarding pass or a music playlist to Siri. Sorry for those of you whose phones just activated. The photos, news, and stock apps have been improved, as well as Apple Books, the app formerly known as iBooks, and now represented simply by a symbol. Apple is introducing a Memoji on the iPhone X. It's a customized avatar that you can use in iMessage and FaceTime to represent you. So, do you risk your iDevice with a beta? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
Talking about emojis and all that, we're in a store. I look off to the side, and there's all these yellow pencils.
Yep.
With a pile of poop on top.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And I'm looking at it, and the cashier turns to me and she goes, yeah, those are a number two pencil.
Boom, boom. Thank you. He'll be here all week. Try the meal.
I thought, what a clever idea.
Yeah, it really is.
And that is one of the more popular emojis. And it's one of the animated emojis, an Animoji, on the iPhone X.
So that's what they did. They take this little rubber thing, pile of poop emoji, stick it on top of a yellow pencil. Yeah, it's a number two pencil. Yep.
Well, here's an interesting thing. Years and years ago, I picked up Amelia from work, and we were driving home, and I had the radio on, and they had a news story about the new emojis that were coming out, because apparently that's news now. That's what passes for news everywhere.
In fact, the Emoji Committee just announced the new emojis that are coming this fall.
Right. And one of them was the poop emoji, and I turned to Amelia and said, oh, you'll be seeing that a lot. She laughed. So now whenever I send her anything, I end it with three hearts
and a poop.
And every time I do that, in my head, as I tap it out, I'm going, dun, 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 dun.
You should send her one of these pencils.
I should send her a pencil. But yeah, it's, emojis are big. Memojis are emojis that look like you, just in case the people you're sending to have forgotten what you look like, because they never see your face anymore.
It's cute to have a little animated thing. Although it's you build the emoji yourself, so it's the way it's not necessarily the way you do look; it's the way you want to look.
Well, it's Second Life, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Second Life and emojis.
Samsung has a similar feature, but it uses the camera to scan you, and from what I was reading about, the uncanny valley is just terrible. It's it's so weird looking.
Yeah,
there's this. Slope of a curve on looks like a robot, looks really, really strange, looks like a person.
Yep.
And and we're still in that looks really, really strange valley.
Right. And that gap between looks really strange and looks like a human, it looks like a person, is called the uncanny valley. And the human brain is wired to recognize other humans. So crossing that valley is very, very hard. And so that's called the uncanny valley. And that's why, you see movies these days that are very good. But if you really pay, and you see a lot of CGI, particularly in like superhero movies and stuff, and you don't mind it because it's in the middle of action and it's all happening fast. But the reality is if you stop and look at it, it definitely doesn't look real.
Yeah.
And so if you really stop, and much of it, by the way, is gravity. Almost nobody gets gravity and the physics of gravity correct. Mm-hmm. Almost nobody does.
Yeah, I've seen stories about the astronauts on station will sometimes look at themselves in the mirror and go, what? That's me? Because you look different. Fluids in your body, don't settle the way they do. Mm-hmm. And so you get a facelift in space.
Yep.
And just don't come back.
Here's a weird thing.
And you're in for a big letdown when you come back to us.
Right. Yeah. Earth. Here's a weird thing. Hang by your heels, or I suppose just tip your head off the couch so that it's hanging down, and take a selfie, and then look at it. Many people will not recognize themselves.
Yep.
Good point.
There's something I've seen done on like magic shows where you take a picture and then turn your smile upside down. So an upside down smile is a frown, right? Mm-hmm. But it looks so weird.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Well, and they've done that with other things where they take like the old Crash Cargo TV series where they just put human mouths in the cartoons, but then they turn them upside down.
Mm-hmm.
So they're actually upside down. That's just weird.
So an upside down face looks like an upside down face.
Right.
But a face with the features upside down looks weird.
Right. Who was it?
It's
was
not
it,
meant to be.
Was it John Travolta or Tom Cruise? One of them. Somebody's theory was the reason his face is so fascinating is because his eyes are upside down. The part that normally curves at the top of his eye is at the bottom of his eye. And the part that's normally kind of straight in the bottom of his eye is at the top of his eye. And I don't remember which person it was, but it's somebody's got who the theory was they had upside down eyes. And once they say that,
then you
kind of see it.
Yeah.
But I don't remember who it was.
Now I'll never see it right.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly right.
Well, you can always, I think he's just got a new movie coming out, Tom Cruise.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God, don't search for images with Tom Cruise eyes upside down.
You know, don't. No. Absolutely don't. He's got that three-quarter face thing that he does where he looks one quarter away. So you only see three quarters of his face. And then he clenches his jaw so that muscle gets big. Yeah. And then, of course, they spritz him down so he glistens. And that's pretty much every photo you'll see of Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Everyone.
So in the new Mission Impossible movie, there's a scene where he's running across a roof and jumps to get to the next roof and misses and breaks his foot. And that's the take they used.
Yes.
He climbs up onto the next roof and keeps running with a broken foot.
Because got to get the shot.
Got to get the shot.
Show must go on.
And that was the scene they used in the actual movie. They didn't say, you know, take it again. Well, partly because his foot was broken.
Yeah.
Well, but it kind of amuses me. They've made a huge deal out of this for the last 3 months. On the other hand, if you look at Jackie Chan movies, every single bone in his body at least once. He's got a hole in his skull still there from a thing. And those takes were all used.
Yeah, especially, I know he got messed up with the ribs and everything else when he was going through a ladder, the runs on a ladder.
Yep.
Trying to slide through that, and he wound up bruising, I think, and cracking like 6 ribs.
Yep.
It's like,
but you almost expect that with a martial artist.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
He started out as a stunt guy. I mean,
Peking Opera. You want to see something crazy, go to the Peking Opera.
Yeah.
It's not an opera, and it's not a Peking, but...
Right. But and you want to talk about guys who get thrown around. They get thrown around more than Buster Keaton used to.
Yeah.
And he was in a, I forget what they call that kind of act now. But the entire act was his parents threw him around the stage.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was pretty much in vaudeville, simpler times. And there were no child labor laws. But they would throw him around the stage. They'd throw him into the tuba in the pit. They would throw him everywhere. And because he did it from such a young age, he learned how to fall.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody taught him how to fall. He just learned how not to be hurt when his father threw him on
the stage.
So that's why in his movies that you see in the silence that he did, all those stunts are him.
There's a poster for one of his movies that lists every bone he's broken. There's an x-ray of his body and every bone is broken.
Yep.
And that's the poster for the movie.
Pretty much all of them, really.
Pretty much all of them, yeah.
Ouch.
Oh, yeah. Well, him and Evel Knievel.
Yeah.
Same idea.
Yeah, there's...
You know, the show must go on. People go to, no matter how much people deny it, at least part of the draw of a NASCAR race is a crash.
Oh. Well, Talladega.
And seeing the people...
Talladega is the best one because it's not if they're going to crash.
Yeah.
It's when they're going to crash.
And how many.
And just 2 weeks ago, the Daytona one.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was unbelievable,
and
that crash.
And seeing the drivers get out of the car and mad that they crashed and stomp away is amazing. And,
Thankful that they lived.
Yeah. Well, and partly that's what made Dale Earnhardt's crash where he was killed so traumatic is it was a nothing crash. He just tapped the wall.
Right.
No big deal. What do you mean he's dead? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, the safety features that are in the cars now versus what was when,
his crash
are totally different.
Was that one where the car flips over a dozen times and just disintegrates and the driver gets out and waves,
waves to the crowd. Yeah, pretty amazing stuff. All right. That music tells me that we are done for this hour. You've wasted an hour of your life with us, but you get to do it again. And don't go away, because don't forget, Uncle Dave's Story Hour is coming up. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, Uncle Dave, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. For no discernible reason, you continue to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. Shockingly, it's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. Stay tuned. Take a short bio break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole nother hour. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Cindy from Pembroke, New York on the line. Hi, Cindy. What's up?
Hi, guys. Well, I'm retiring in April and decided to be a big girl and get my first laptop.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, which I think I need a course in it. But it came with McAfee Security.
Yeah.
And that ran out, and my guy suggested I talk to you guys and find out, should I go with McAfee or something would be better?
Well, McAfee is very good.
Mm-hmm.
But it does cost money.
Yeah.
And as a soon-to-be retiree, or did you already retire?
I turned 62 and said, heck with it.
Yeah, there you go. I'll tell you what, I also retired a while ago, and I should have done it 40 years ago. It's the greatest thing there is. But at any rate, the point is McAfee does cost money, and as a retiree, you may wish to save a little money. So there are, in fact, plenty of
freebies
out there. Yeah. Now, what operating system are you running?
I have no idea.
Okay, is it Windows? Is it a Mac?
Oh, it's with it wouldn't let me do Chrome. Yeah, I'm really bad at this. I just hit the E, and then I go to where up. It turned into Bing, but then...
Okay, you got the E, the blue E.
Yeah.
You're on Windows.
Okay, thank you.
So if you go to... if you go onto the web through the E, and you go to securitytango.com...
Okay.
You will see a thing called... the Security Tango, duh. And the basic idea behind it is that we have several things there that you can use. One of the menu choices under Windows software is antivirus. And you'll see a half a dozen, seven actually, antivirus programs listed alphabetically, including McAfee. A couple of them, like Avast and AVG, are free. So you might want to take a look at those, and that takes you to their actual websites so that you can see what they're like and see if you like them and like the idea of them. I don't recommend one over the other because, in fact, they're all pretty good.
One of the things, though, about the bigger names like McAfee and Norton is the bad guys know about them and tend not to release bad things until they can get past the big names. So there's something to be said with going for one of the smaller companies.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
But I use both Avast and AVG and on two different computers, of
course.
Right,
you don't want to put more than one antivirus program
on the computer. Let me make that clear. I use two different ones just to try them out, and I have had no problems with either one. They update constantly, and I've never had a virus issue.
What's the other one you said between AF, besides AFG?
Avast and AVG.
Avast, like a pirate. AVAST.
Again, if you go to securitytango.com, and
you'll
across
see them there.
Near the top is the menu. If you click on Windows Software and then on Antivirus, you will see a list of them, Avast, AVG, eTrust, McAfee, Panda, Spybot, and Symantec, which is Norton. So any one of those is useful. A couple of them, like Avast and AVG, and I think Panda, are free and do a fine job. Nobody's perfect.
Yeah.
And all of it is really a kind of a game of leapfrog. You know, the bad guys put out some stuff, and the good guys figure out how to prevent it. And then the bad right. guys put out more stuff, and the good guys figure out how to prevent that. And it just, so none of them are perfect. All of them are good.
And that's one of the reasons we like to recommend using one AVG software from one company, and antivirus software, if it's AVG or Avast or whatever. And then a different anti-malware product, like Malwarebytes and Super Anti-Spyware. No one company can do it all perfectly, and you have a lot better luck with two different companies.
You're not putting all your eggs in one basket.
Okay, so the antivirus and malware. Okay.
Yep. And both of those are listed under Windows Software on the securitytango.com.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks, guys.
I would recommend, though, like, one antivirus program, AVG or Avast, whichever you choose, or one of the others, and then both Super Anti-Spyware and Malwarebytes.
Both of those, unless you pay for them, you have to run by hand.
Yep.
So you don't have to do that constantly, obviously. But, if you do a lot of downloading, you should check. If you haven't done it in a while, you should check, that sort of thing.
Okay.
All right.
There you go.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Have fun.
Well, I will.
Oh, God. Learning. Yep. Okay. Thanks. Yep. And again, it's securitytango.com. I actually set it up. To do a secure connection too, but I haven't made it universal yet. So you can also do HTTPS securitytango.com. But since you don't have to log in. Since you can't log in, it doesn't matter whether you use the secure version or the non-secure version, because you're not going to see anything anyway. All right, our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. Question for you. I was wondering, under services on my Windows computer, I've got it says Microsoft Office 1. I'm sorry, click to run service. Can I turn that service off?
The Microsoft Office click to run service?
Yes.
That is supposed to make Office run faster.
Okay, so I can turn it off.
Yeah. Are you using Microsoft Office?
Using it, but I don't use it often enough to worry about how fast it is.
Right. Most machines nowadays are so fast, the difference is so minimal, it shouldn't matter. You definitely
since Click to Run provides updates to the Microsoft Office suite, and it is an important component of Microsoft Office, it is not advisable to uninstall it.
Yeah, I just want to turn the service off. I check for updates on almost everything manually anyways.
Yeah, and it looks like it is just for Microsoft Office, nothing else in Microsoft, Office.
Right. So if you go into, Start, Control Panel, Administrative Tools, Services, find Microsoft Office, click to run, select Properties, right-click on it and select Properties. In the General tab, you'll find the Startup type, and you can pull it down and select Disable.
Right.
And then it won't run anymore.
Yeah, because it's just, I try to get rid of unnecessary services running in the background. They just drive me nuts.
Yep. No, I get it. I absolutely get it.
Yeah. So, and the other thing I wanted to say is I thought it was kind of funny, and maybe not as funny to you, but when I checked the Soundbites website, and you go to the map for listeners.
Yeah.
I noticed there's a lot of listeners right off the coast of South America in the water.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. That's an issue with it's very weird. The way we do this.
The continents are drifting.
Right. Right. The continents are drifting. The way we do this is with a program that doesn't seem to be as accurate as I'd like it to be. I just found another one that I'm using on another website, and I'm looking into how to include that on Soundbites, because Soundbites is frankly a WordPress thing, and it's not as easy to just throw your own stuff in there.
It looks like the little map is way off, but if you click on to see the bigger map, it's better.
Like I said, it wasn't a criticism. I just thought it was funny.
No, it is funny. Oh, you're right. When you click on the bigger map, things suddenly appear correct. It's the little map. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
It's their coordinate structure on the little map. Well, thank you. I'm not sure that's something I'm going to fix tomorrow, but thank you.
I just thought you had a lot of people living on the water out there.
Yeah.
It's water world down there, so be aware that's coming our way.
Thank you for the information.
Thanks.
Have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Have fun.
Thank you.
The Soundbites map. Well, it is what it is. And as much as we all love it, it's it's a problem when you have
that was a big thing.
A third-party product.
Yeah, and it was a big thing on the web a few years ago. Everyone was putting maps up of where their visitors were from. It kind of died off.
Yeah. I appreciate it. I've on Makers Exchange. I've got one running, but it's there's nobody. There's not many people on it yet because things not really open for business yet. So yeah, it's a nice feature. People like to see where everybody's from, but we'll see. We'll see as we go along. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed. From Henrietta, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Hi. I just want to ask you guys a question about your what you thought. During the time that Amazon had some problems, some of the big box stores were advertising Chromebooks made by different manufacturers, and they all had the same features, basically. But my question is, they only had 4 gigs of memory. Is that sufficient for a Chromebook?
Always has been for me. Now, well, yeah. There's a caveat. Okay. There are really, at this point, two levels of Chromebook. There's what's always considered to be the original Chromebook, which does basically web browsing. It is a web browser, and everything you do gets done essentially in the web browser. 4 gigs is more than enough for the average person. Dave has 143 tabs open at any one time, and it still runs fine.
Yeah, it goes fine.
The newer ones that are coming out now have the ability to run Android apps. And if you want to run multiple Android apps simultaneously, 4 gig may not be enough.
This was a Samsung product, and I noticed Dell had one out, and they all had the same size screen, et cetera, et cetera. Yep. And unfortunately, they all said 4 gigs, so I didn't know if that was like a pig in the poke or not, because they knocked off about $20, you know, from the average price for that particular day.
Right. And well, here's the thing. Most things that happen in a Chromebook actually happen on the web. So let's say you're writing. Yeah, I one of my Chromebooks, my old Chromebook, is a 2 gig machine. I wrote 3 books on that thing because I'm writing them in Google Drive on the web, so a 200-page book is actually taking up more RAM on Google's website than it is on my computer.
I see.
So it didn't matter at all. Now at 2 gig, and with the older, slower processor, it ran a tiny bit slow, and more importantly, I couldn't open 40, 50 tabs at once. But then I don't do that. I generally have 5 or 6 tabs open here. And this is a 4 gig machine, but I've opened 30 simultaneously.
So would you say kind of bite the bullet and buy one with 8 gig in it?
Well, if you want to run, Android apps, then absolutely. And the difference in price generally, it depends, but, if you can't afford it, getting the 8 gig one means that if you want to run Android apps, it will be a little faster and a little easier to do.
I got you. Okay, that's what I wanted to know. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Yep. The big thing with Chromebooks is they are not really equivalent to a computer. You know, the speed of the processor, the speed of the amount of RAM, that's sort of fair, the size of the hard drive. Not really equivalent to a computer because most processing takes place in the cloud. And because most processing takes place in the cloud, you don't need a lot of processing power or RAM or storage on the device itself. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Munich, Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Rick from Pittsford, New York on the line. Hiya, Rick. What's up?
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I have a question about Super Anti-Spyware and malware bytes.
Sure.
I run Super Anti-Spyware once at least two times a day. It picks up like 600, 700 hits.
Sure.
I get rid of them. I then run Windows, history query, and it sees a number of cookies, a couple hundred. It gets rid of them. Fine. Then I tried running the history, and it cleared out everything. And then I tried running Super Anti Spyware. It can't find a thing. My question is Super Anti Spyware doing anything for me? And should I just use Windows, the clear history? It's a heck of a lot faster.
Clear history does what it says on the tin. It clears your history. It doesn't get rid of anything on your system. All it does is get rid of that list that's in your browser.
The list of websites you visited.
Right.
Well, I understand that, but when I run clear history, it gets rid of all the cookies. If I run anti-spyware right after it, it can't find anything.
Right. So, yes, and cookies are the main thing you're going to get wandering around on the web. But it's not the only thing you're going to get.
Right. Other things hide.
So clearing your history will get rid of those cookies, but it will not get rid of any of the other spyware things that Super Anti-Spyware handles.
It's not the full equation.
Right.
Okay. So I might as well run both of them.
You really need to do both.
Okay, great. The other question, I run malware bytes. Not too often because it's never found a thing. In fact, I got updated it today, and it takes 10 minutes to sweep the system and never finds anything.
Yeah, because usually if you're running Super Anti-Spyware first, that usually does a pretty darn good job. But like we say, there is still once in a blue moon stuff will slip through. So that's why we recommend running Malware Bytes. Once in a while, something might slip through, and Malware Bytes will find it. Not a heck of a lot, but...
And like you said, it's only 10 minutes.
Yeah. I'll bet you if you reverse the order, if you ran Malware Bytes first and then did Super Anti-Spyware, you'd find Malware Bytes find some things that us, and then Super Anti-Spyware will find less.
Well, I'll try that.
Yeah. There you go. Thanks, Rick.
Hey, bye.
Yeah, that's why we tell people run both. They don't.
Yeah.
They hit very many similar things.
There's no question. Little overlap between them.
Yeah,
but
and
they do
no one
things.
Product right. does it all.
Right, but they do different things, and that's important.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do we think?
Hold on, let me just get set up here.
All right, Dave's going to get set up here. It's been a while. He's a little rusty, but here we go. All right, kiddies, it's that time once again. Get your footy jammies on. Grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Oh, yeah. Yep.
There you are.
Oh, I've been wide awake for this one, and you folks got to kind of bear with me here for a moment. As you know, we've told you folks that there are tons of scams going on, and I'm sure, you've heard all the different stories and everything else. Well, I've had the pleasure so far, and this is, I'm hoping, going to be a continuing segment here, because now this has happened 2 days in a row on me, and I'm hoping that they're going to do this once more. And
what, your password. Ben, press pound.
Bear with me for a minute, folks.
Dave is getting some stuff out of his phone right now.
I bet that audio jack wire laying there feeds into the board somehow.
Probably not, no. That's just a charging cable.
Yeah, but no, there's one that has an audio jack on it.
Oh, maybe.
Let me try this again. What, like I say, you've heard of, you know, different...
Please enter your password.
Well, you might not want to play those sounds out.
Yeah, because those okay. Sounds are unique to your password.
Now, here's... Now, here's a message that I've gotten twice.
First saved voice message.
24 working hours. And once it expired after that, you will be taken under custody by the local cops, as there are 4 serious allegations pressed on your name at this moment. We would request you to get back to us, so that we can discuss about this case, before taking any legal action against you. The number to reach us is...
Now, here's the thing, folks. That's a robot. And I've gotten it from 2 different area codes and 2 different voices. And I'll probably get it again. But the thing that is, they're bogus.
Mm-hmm.
No local cops. Hello. The slang and everything else. If you sit there and listen to it and think about it. Oh, the local cops. Yeah, right. Well, I'm hoping, and like I say, that this will continue. Because they've already called me 2 days in a row.
One was a female robot voice, and the other was a male robot voice.
And they were from different sides of the country. One number registered, I think it was down in Florida area, and the other's out in California. So, you know, this is the stuff that's going on, and these are the folks that are getting suckered into being told, yeah, go out and get the Target cards or the iTunes cards and all that other stuff. This is stuff that happens every day, and you folks just have to turn around and hang up. Unless you know how to play with them and not get stung, just hang up on them.
And never, ever say yes.
Correct. Never say... And... If they say, all right, what's your name? Don't even give that to them. Well, who are you calling?
Yeah, they should know your name. They
called
you.
If they're calling my number, they should know who the heck they're calling.
And if the police are going to come and arrest you, no, if the cops are going to come,
yeah,
they
the
should
cops,
know your name.
Yeah. Hello.
The cops don't warn you they're going to come and arrest you. They come and arrest you.
Yeah.
Well, and I've had that before. That's my response. Anytime I pick up the phone and somebody says, who is this? I hang up. If you don't know who you called,
right?
I can't talk to you.
So what I'm hoping to do is they might do. I'm hoping they do it again on Monday because they must take the weekend off. You know, evidently the 24 hours doesn't mean anything because they don't work on the weekends.
Right.
So, you know, here I'm still. That was.
And they're robots to begin with. Why aren't they working on the
weekends? Here's the thing, folks. That they were saying 24 hours. That was 3 days ago.
So really, the door should bust down any second.
Yeah.
The cops, not the police.
Yeah, not the police.
The cops.
Yeah.
Now, are they coming to your house, or are they going to trace your cell phone and show up here?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
right here.
That phone number, yeah.
But this is the thing. For you folks.
If that happens, I'm just sitting like this. Whatever you want.
But seriously, folks, these scams are going on all the time. We talk about it all the time and tell you, you know, if in doubt, just like the stuff that will pop up on your screen, that your machine has been hacked, hello, turn it off. Just like on these phone calls, hang up. If it's the real authorities, one, they're not going to do it by phone call. You're going to get official letters, and then the police will be there at the door knocking. You're not going to get a robo phone call telling you to please call back.
Right.
That just doesn't happen. They want to talk to a live person.
Mm-hmm. There was one call like this that went viral a couple of weeks ago. They called the police station.
I remember.
Yeah, the police officer in uniform on the phone with them on speakerphone while someone else is recording said, so the cops are going to come and arrest me? Yes, yeah, the cops are going to come and arrest you. The cops are going to come here. Yeah, yep, the cops will come right to you.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you want me to get iTunes cards? I'd be better. You know, I'd rather write a check. Oh no, you have to do iTunes cards.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know the IRS accepted iTunes cards as payment. Oh, that's just some new you know, technical thing they're doing. You don't have to worry about that.
They will try to paint a scam story and say, oh, it's easier for you and all this stuff. No, it's not. It's easier for them to rip you off.
Right.
So please, when in doubt, just hang up. Or, like we said, turn it off,
turn the computer. Just hang up on them. It's a scam.
You were lucky enough to get to that infected page first. Before anyone else reported it to get it removed.
Yeah.
Right, usually you go back again and it's already
It's a lost link or anything. You know, you just get a thing that can't be found.
Right, right.
But just be aware, folks, because like I say, you know, if you want to give your money away, donate it here to this station during their fund drive or any other time. And, you know,
do good with your money.
Yeah. We try to present the stuff, you know, to keep you on top of stuff.
I'm also pretty sure we don't take iTunes gift cards. I think we take actual money.
Yeah, we take real money. Yeah. Your check, we will accept your check made out to Jazz 90.1. And, you know, it keeps this great program and all the other programs that you hear throughout the year and keeping you informed and the money, your rest of your money in your pocket. So, you know.
Right. Oh, and to go back to, I believe it was Ed. I want to say it was Ed. Yes, from Henrietta, who wanted to know if you needed 4 gig or 8 gig. I just realized the laptop I'm using here is only 2 gig. And it's...
And you didn't notice.
And I didn't notice. It's ridiculously fast. Now, I've only got 4 tabs open, and I'm not running any Android apps.
Okay.
But...
meanwhile, I have a quad i7 because I'm doing a video stream and an audio stream and multiple cameras.
Right. You're clearly doing more and you need a machine that does more. Also, you're generating so much heat that you need a cooling pad under it.
Yep. And what is my temperature today? My core temperature is 158 degrees.
Yeah. Fahrenheit?
Fahrenheit, yeah.
Well, that's okay then. If it was 158 Celsius, we'd be in some trouble. But I've only got 2 gig here. I've only got 4 tabs open. One is on Soundbites. One is on my caller list on Google Drive. One is the Google thing, and one is running a timer. And I've still got 30% of my capacity available. And that's simply because these things open up more and more things. One of the nice things that Google has done is, by the way, and this does use a little more space, is they've sandboxed all the tabs. What that means is if you have 2 tabs open and you get caught by some sort of malware in one of them, it can't cross over to the other one. So if you've got your banking open on one and you're browsing the web on another and you get caught on the web one, it can't cross over to your bank.
Get to the
other, that takes a little bit more RAM, so you may not be able to open as many tabs on a 2 gig machine as you're used to. But you know what? For that kind of security, I'm willing to give up a little bit of RAM.
Hello.
That's fine with me.
Mm-hmm. It's still a fast machine anyways, because you're not running that huge operating system underneath it.
Well, you're not running the huge operating system, and you're really doing very little on the machine itself. This is not comparable to a regular machine.
No.
The operating system is very tiny, and really what it mostly does is just run a web browser. And then the web browser does everything else in the cloud. So, like I said, I've written 3 books using this Chromebook, this 2 gig Chromebook, and using a 2 gig Chromebook. And I never ran out of space and I never ran out of time because all of the stuff that's happening is happening up in the cloud, and I don't actually have that whole book down on my machine. Now, I can copy it down. I can duplicate it so that I have a copy. Mm-hmm. I can do all of that stuff. But I don't have to, and I don't have to put it on that. I back up to an external hard drive on my network. But the point is I can back up to whatever I need to back up to.
The way somebody asked me, you know, how to best explain the Chromebook. And the way I put it is, remember back in the old days, you would sit down at your desk and turn on the CRT monitor. Okay, and then boom, a menu popped up. All right, and you would select whether you want to do, say, Lotus 1234 or a database program. And it would connect to the server, and boom, you were working on it.
Right.
I said, that's the way the Chromebook is. You're literally turning on a terminal, and it's connecting up to the internet. All your documents are up there. All the programs that you want to use for as far as writing programs, they're all up there. And you can get through it through this Chromebook. It's just a tool to connect you to the internet.
Right. We used to call those back in the day dumb terminals.
Yep.
Now they're called smart terminals because they do have a little bit of processing power in them. But that's all a Chromebook is. The real work takes place in the cloud. Now, I have worked in places where there was no connectivity. And I have set my Chromebook up so that it does download what I'm working on. So if I go somewhere and I lose connectivity or have gone somewhere where there is no connectivity, I can still work. Again, can't open quite as many tabs when I'm doing that as I can otherwise. But in a pinch, I can do that. So we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we
have some more news.
Have some more news.
Oh, okay. That works.
And this I like this. Project Loon, the internet delivering balloon system that grew out of Alphabet's Project X division, has announced its first commercial deal. The recent Project X graduate will partner with Telecom Kenya to increase connectivity in that country. Connectivity is critical. If you're not online, you are left out, Joe Mucheros, Kenya's Information, Communication, and Technology Minister, said. Loon is another technology that is being introduced that the licensed operators hopefully can be able to use. With this new partnership, Telecom Kenya will provide the internet signal, and Loon will spread it over remote areas of Kenya. Loon initially started in 2011 within Alphabet, then Google's experimental Project X division. The basic idea was that instead of building permanent physical structures with limited range, bunches of antenna-outfitted balloons could fly 60,000 feet above the ground, follow semi-regular wind patterns, and cover areas of roughly 2,000 square miles at a time. The company has simulated 30 million kilometers of potential navigation daily to better understand how jet streams and weather patterns will have an impact on its preferred balloon routes, or if you prefer, routes. Over time, Loon's solar-powered balloons and overall system have steadily improved. The project started off aiming for 3G levels of connectivity, but in 2015 it progressed to the point of providing 4G across an area as big as Rhode Island. They've also provided smoother launches with the ability to deploy a balloon every half hour and keep them in the air for 6 months or more, and stronger signals. Its latest system will potentially support 10 times as many users as the previous iteration. Up until now, the project has been limited. Google held beta tests in places like New Zealand, Brazil, and Central California, all very foreign, faraway places. Later, Loon launched select limited deployments, such as working to connect areas of Peru following mass floods, and a high-profile effort to help connect people in Puerto Rico after the aftermath of Hurricane Maria. Working with local governments, Loon has publicly stated that that effort helped bring connectivity to more than 200,000 people on the island. The goal with the Kenyan deployment is to improve connectivity for large swaths of the country not currently covered by mobile providers. In many such locations, building physical connectivity structures, infrastructure, has proven difficult. While some local experts express concerns about these news outlets, noting the potential for dependency on a single foreign company or affordability being a long-term worry, everybody involved seems to believe some connectivity certainly beats no connectivity for the time being. So would you get your connectivity from a balloon? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Hopefully they'll keep them out of the way of the airplanes.
Well, right. It's a very, very clever idea. When you have places that cannot where you cannot easily or inexpensively provide wires or even a decent number of mesh or wireless networks. The ability to fly those networks around over the country is a brilliant idea.
And even, you know, cell phone towers, you're always having trouble, you know, getting line of sight to the tower because there's a building or a hill in the way.
Right.
So
when the line of sight is up, it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Rochester, New York. Hi, Steve. What's up?
Hello, you guys. I got a question for you, Nick, about 3D printing.
Yeah.
I know that you're interested, and I've become interested, too. You know, we're sort of contemporaries. While you were over at NAS studying the arts, I was over at Fisher studying chemistry. So the question about 3D printing actually relates to chemistry.
Sure.
But here it is. What do you think? Is it possible to patent a 3D printing process so that the math that you generate that generates the image is copyrightable or patentable, so that the device that's created by the 3D printer is then covered by the patent?
So you want to patent the actual algorithm?
Yes. What the mathematics that generates the figure,
right,
is key to the operation of the device. Okay. So we've got the patent for the device. Okay.
Right.
So what we want to do is, could we use a 3D printing to extend, for example, just think of the simple problem of how do I drill a spiral in a 4-inch thick cylinder? With a regular drill, it's pretty hard, but by 3D printing, I could print a 3D spiral 2 inches, 3 inches, or 4 inches high.
Right, right.
Okay, so the algorithm that creates that is a mathematical formula, okay? So I'm really not sure, that's why I wanted a little lecture from you about how to view this, if this is actually possible to do, or is it something that perhaps might not allow for the flexibility that I envision?
Well, okay, first, I'm not a lawyer.
Okay.
I don't even play one on television anymore.
No.
So that's the first caveat. I have not seen many. I've seen lots of how to print screws in 3D, and that's both the external spiral screw itself and the internal spiral of the screw hole.
The thread.
So I'm not sure how you need, without you going into detail, of course.
Oh, I can send you some stuff at the station that you can take a look at so that you'd be in a better position to maybe understand the 3D shape that I'm making. And then
right.
You can say, well, you know, yeah, we could look at it as a 3D printing project, or a 3D printing project might be tedious for this. Also with 3D, we could maybe extend some of the geometry to make a more complex shape.
Right.
You know, because when you're machining a piece of whatever it is, the more you touch it, the more it costs and the more complicated. So if you need a 3D item, the printing might provide a good one. But we also need to use, PVC or CPVC material for chemical inertness.
Right. And both of those are available as filaments.
Right. So we can buy filaments of the PVC, and then it'll generate a PVC disc, perhaps.
Right, right, right. Yes, all of that is doable, and depending on how clean you want the eventual part is how much money you spend on the printer, to be crude about it. The cheaper printers are going to look a little less polished and more expensive.
Is it possible to take a less produced piece and perhaps finish it like you would in metal?
It depends. You want to look up Polisher. Polysher, I believe, is how it's spelled. And it's a type of filament that can then be finished off with an acetone type bath.
Okay. So it's kind of like a fire wash with glass, where you would
exactly.
Use the solution to smooth the surface.
Right, exactly right.
Okay.
And poly smooth and poly sheer are the material names that I have in my head. But as to whether or not
and you need a nebulizer.
And you need a nebulizer, which...
Why don't you need a nebulizer? I'll be wearing a mask.
Yeah.
My little green mask, if you see this character, you know, don't approach him. Call the police or the fire.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. No, the nebulizer is the device you put it in that takes the smoothing material, the acetone-like substance.
And nebulizes it?
Nebulizes it. Makes a cloud that settles on the object and smooths it. But that's a possibility. You can also create these things out of sintered metal. Now we're getting into money.
Right.
But you can create them out of sintered metal, which in the long run, if you're making a piece that goes into a car or something like that, is your ultimate goal.
Yeah.
But in terms of prototyping and stuff like that, pretty much any 3D printer will allow you to make a prototype so that you can get the dimensions correct and the et cetera, and figure out how best to produce it for bulk.
Well, that's what I was looking to find out, and you certainly showed a good deal of knowledge, you know, just off the top of your head and how this processing is working. So it's an interesting thing, because with 3D printing, if you can, you know, describe it mathematically, then you can do something with it.
Right.
You know? And I do have a patent lawyer, so, you know, we can run those questions by someone who does have the experience to, you know, give us some at least good advice, and if we need to, I suppose, you know, Perry Mason's number is available somewhere to ask that.
Right. You also
you don't remember who Perry Mason I is. Some of the other children might not.
And, of course, Hamilton Berger.
Yes, who never won a case, I think, except for one time.
One time, part one. It was a two-part story. Part one, he won. Part two, it turns out he lost.
Yeah.
Lost on appeal.
I mean, poor Hamilton, I'm surprised.
Yeah. But you also want to look at a program called OpenSCAD.
OpenSCAD.
It is a piece of software where you actually describe the device with mathematics, and then it shows you the 3D model.
Okay. I have Visio drawings of the device. Would that particular software be able to import the graphic and then be able to display it?
It depends, I believe. I don't. I honestly don't know. I shouldn't even start talking about it. I haven't used it enough. I've only used it in script mode. So okay. I haven't played with it enough.
Well, I'll send you some stuff to take a look at, and we can talk about it, because it sounds like it might be very cool.
Could be fun. Thanks.
All right, man. Talk to you later. Thank you. Bye,
Have
Dave.
Fun. All right. That music tells me we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow, so it's safe to listen. And we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites. Right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are indeed member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?